Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we are going to be talking about a fabulous book. It's called Harper's Rules, and it's about a recruiter. Now, there's many of you out there looking for work. Well, this is going to be taking you an extra mile in your thinking. It's going to be telling you how you can find a dream job as well as a perfect relationship if that is something that you are seeking as well. My guest today is Danny Cahill. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Now, you have your own company, which is Hobson Associates, and you are in the recruiting business yourself. You really like to deal with people that have software sales background, biotech sales background,
right,
and industrial sales background. Now, you have also developed online training and mentoring for people that will enable recruiters to do even a better job today in matching people up with the right kind of business. You've also been a playwright. That was amazing to me. That was the last thing I would expect a recruiter to be involved with. But you've won an award. You've won the Maxwell Anderson and the CIB Theater Awards. You've also written for CBS Television, trade journals. My goodness, you've had such a unique background.
Yeah, I've been fortunate in a lot of ways.
Now, Danny, you put this together. You've been involved in the recruiting arena yourself. Why was it important to you to share some secrets with people? Why didn't you just keep it to yourself?
Well, you know, here's where it came from, Donna. As you said, I run a very large headhunting firm, and the business has been very kind to me, and I've been very successful. And I've now been through several different recessions, so I just got tired of what is always predictable, which is at the end of a recession, people roll out the same old, here's how to get a job books. And those of us who are in the recruiting business know that these books, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, are sort of jokes. The techniques that they have been advocating have been around for 50 or 60 years. And so I just said, enough's enough. People have to know how recruiters really work and how we really get people's jobs. But as you say, I've been a playwright and fortunate enough to have some off-Broadway cred. And I learned a long time ago that people learn through story and through narrative. And it's always occurred to me that there's really no difference between the way you go about getting a relationship and the way you go about getting a job. And if people understood how headhunters get jobs, they could get a better job or they could get a better relationship. I find that dating is very much like interviewing, and breaking up is very much like quitting a job, and getting your resume together is very much like going on Match.com. So I decided to write the book, and I decided the only way to write it is to recast it as fiction. So I took a 34-year-old unemployed woman that I made up named Casey, and I said, what if somebody was unemployed, divorced, and needed both to find a job and find a new relationship? And so she meets this Uber headhunter called Harper, and he walks her through the process. So the book is a fast, fun read where you get involved in characters and plot and narrative, and without even paying attention, you realize, wow, I've just learned the contemporary ways of getting a job. And we're fortunate enough that it's been on the market for a couple of months now. We've already won the Axiom Award for Best Business Fiction of 2011. So people are responding to it, which is fantastic.
You had a number of questions right in the very beginning of the book that is posed to the reader.
Yeah.
But you really presented some interesting thoughts, and one is, why did you buy this book? Can we write your eulogy right now?
Yeah.
If you've stopped laughing, there's a quote in here, you quit whatever it is that you're involved with if you're not enjoying yourself. And then,
right,
do you believe what they tell you at work? Are you staying in your job because they need you right now? And something that really grabbed me, in fact, I highlighted it in yellow, there was the statement to Casey, if you're acting like you're leaving, you're leaving. And I can't tell you how many people I've spoken with through the years that detest where they are and won't leave because they're scared to death of what's out there in the unknown. And that was really a powerful statement when I looked at it. I said, wow, this is something that people often are contributing in their job environments. They don't like their job environments, and they're doing such mediocre work. It's almost as if they're saying, fire me so that I don't have to leave on my own.
Oh, boy, you're so right, Donna. Yeah. You know, it took me a long time to learn because I think it was probably the gift of growing up poor that I had absolutely no fear of taking risks because I knew what it was like to not have money, so it didn't scare me to spend money. So I was just a few years out of college when I bought this firm, and I spent every dime I had and bought the firm, and it worked out for me. And 3 years later, when I started saying, well, I really would like to try to write theater or television shows, I never had this fear of, oh, I'm going to be laughed at. I wrote one, and I called agents, cold called agents, and sent them scripts and ended up getting my play produced. So I never understood this fear that I have seen so many times that you're talking about, where people are both spending their days complaining about their life and yet doing absolutely nothing about it. It took me a long time to figure out that most people will tell you they want to make a move, but all they really want is empathy, and they want to complain. So that section you're talking about in the book is Harper saying to Casey, before I show you how to get a job, let's make sure you really want to leave your job. And probably the most powerful part of that that section of the book is the question that we ask all our candidates here, which is, if you were unemployed and you now could have the job you have right now back, or you could see what else is out there before you took your job back, would you interview someplace else or would you just take your job back? And almost 8 out of 10 people will say, oh, well, if I knew I could get my job back, I'd want to see what else is out there. Well, then clearly it's all about fear. And the real question is not, do you have fear of change? Everyone does. But what would you do if you weren't afraid?
Mm-hmm. You have a portion of your book that I thought was quite interesting. It's Harper's Rules, of course, why you should never accept a counter offer.
Right.
And tell my audience, if they're thinking, what does he mean by a counter offer? What that is, what it's relating to. And, of course, this is all your fictitious character, Casey, involved here. But why is that the positioning someone should be alert to and aware of?
Right. So in terms of the job world, a counteroffer is defined as you interview, accept a job, and then you go to your boss and you resign, and your boss talks you into staying and gives you a counteroffer. He says, how much did they give you? I'll give you that if you stay. And most people, again, because they're afraid, say, well, geez, if I take this counteroffer, I'll make more money, and I don't have to prove myself all over again. I don't have to start over. Isn't that the safest thing to do? And, of course, it's very human, because if we leave a job, it's because we feel like we've been undervalued or we haven't been appreciated. So when you get a counteroffer, there's this huge sense of revenge, like I'm getting my due. But in the book, in order to prove this to Casey, Harper puts it in relationship terms, which we do in the entire book, and he says, you just got divorced 2 years ago. Did you ever think about going back to your husband? And it makes her do a flashback of the many times when she was first divorced, when her husband would call her and ask her to go out, when she was tempted because she knew him, and she knew what that night would be like, and she was afraid of being with somebody in an intimate way who she did not know, and was she still attractive? And it's very similar to a counteroffer. Her husband was making her a counteroffer. But what she realizes in the book, and what almost every candidate that I've been working with for 20 years realizes, is you can't go home again, that it'll never be the same, that trust has been violated, and they will always suspect that you're going to leave. They'll never treat you the same. And when the dust settles and all the thrill of taking a counteroffer goes away, you realize nothing's changed, and you're still exactly where you were, and all the issues that caused that marriage to break up, that job to go sour, are still there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Another aspect regarding leaving a positioning, and this happened with a very good friend of mine. There was a downsizing of the company she was with, and she had an excellent, excellent work record. But her whole department was cut away, and because she was a woman that had such an excellent record, she was able to negotiate for severance.
Yes.
And they just bent over backwards for her. And this is something that you talk about in your book, and I thought, whoa, how often is it that someone talks about how to work with severance pay? Now, maybe some of my listeners are in a positioning where maybe they're getting ready to be laid off or there's going to be some kind of a package offered to them. Many people don't realize that they are in a position of negotiation on this, as it was with my girlfriend, and she ended up getting an excellent insurance package. That was more important to her than, let's say, a whole bunch of extra money. And
yeah,
they
sure.
negotiated. They gave her that, and she has that to this day. And she's been gone from the company for 10 years, but she still has that kind of a coverage, and she's just so thrilled she did that. So what can people do? What do they need to pay attention to if they're in that kind of a positioning?
Right. Well, obviously the best time to be negotiating your severance package is when you first take a job, and it sounds like your friend was exceptional, and that helps a lot, because I would say one of the changes in the contemporary marketplace since I've been a headhunter is that there has been less and less both signing bonuses or paying for people's houses and less mm-hmm. severance packages. So in other words, if you don't bring it up, companies trying to save money and trying to be more profitable tend not to bring it up. And in the beginning, Casey, who is, you know, very optimistic and likes to think that every job she takes is going to be fantastic, she first resists it, and she makes the relationship analogy and says, you know, severance is like alimony to me. It feels like I'm asking for something that I don't deserve. And Harper makes it really clear that severance is to protect you because things change. And you cannot always guarantee what will change, and some of these things will be out of your control. And so there are certain things that, and this is laid out in the book, obviously, in the severance side, there's some standards. A standard severance is 1 week's pay for every year you serve the company. So if you leave in the first 2 years, for any reason, you automatically get 2 weeks' pay. You should get all vacation and personal times that are equivalent to whatever you accrued. Generally, a severance package means your health benefits will stay intact and are paid for by the company through the duration of the severance, so that you don't have to go directly on to COBRA. And for the purposes of outside inquiry, for references while you try to look for a job, you are still on the payroll if you have a severance package. That makes a huge difference because you can technically say, I'm not unemployed. And that will help you in leveraging your next job, because if someone offers you a job and they think you're unemployed, they're going to offer you less money than if you are working for someone. That's just a fact of life. So if you have a severance package, you can honestly and truthfully say you're still at the company. Companies tend to provide outplacement services for people who have severance packages, access to resume writing services, printing services, phone, the internet. If there's equity, it should have been, and it's fully vested, the severance package will protect that equity, and you'll be able to cash out. It varies from company to company, and obviously, Donna, the bigger the company, the more lucrative the severance package is. But mm-hmm. what Harper says to Casey in the book is literally right out of my life, because I have an awful lot of people saying, look, I don't need severance. You know, my wife works, or we've got money in the bank. And I always insist on it, because we simply don't know. What's that old saying? If you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You don't know what's going to come down the pike, and you've earned severance. In your friend's case, because of who she is and what she's done for the company. And if it's a new job, you've earned severance because of what you've done in the past and how much the company wants you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I've seen some high-powered candidates who will turn down jobs because there wasn't a sufficient severance package. Now, some people would say, oh, then you're afraid that you're going to fail. No, I've just been around a lot, and I know things happen that are out of my control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Danny, you are a recruiter. And there are many people, they say, oh, I don't want to work with a recruiter. I think of some professionals I've known that say, oh, I've gotten some that were real dogs. They don't really tell the truth. Your standards seem to be pretty high. If someone wanted to approach a recruiter like yourself, what do they need to investigate? What do they need to look for?
That's a great question, and you're right. like any, you know, it's probably true of every profession, right? There are some great ones, there are some terrible ones.
Absolutely.
We hear more about the terrible ones than we do about the great ones. Luckily, there is a governing body of recruiters. It's called NAPS, the National Association of Personnel Services. There aren't very many good search firms that are not in NAPS. So the first thing I would look for is, are they in NAPS? The second thing is, we do have a professional designation among headhunters called the CPC, which is a certified personnel consultant. I've been one, you know, for 20 years. So there's ways that you can vet people like me. You can say, are you a CPC? Is your firm in NAPS? How large is your firm? How long has your firm been in business? So, for example, the average search firm is only 1 to 3 people, and it's only been in business 5 to 7 years. So it gives people a tremendous amount of comfort to hear that I've been in the business for 25 years, and I bought it from the previous owner. So my company, Hobson's, been in business 40 years, and we have 40 people. So we're 10 times larger than most firms, and we've been around 5-6 times longer. So tenure, size, and then you know what? Recruiters are always asking candidates for references. I see nothing wrong with candidates asking recruiters for references. The first time it happened, I have to admit, I felt a little, you know, umbrage, and I was like, who are you to ask me for a reference? But then I was like, good for this candidate for standing up for himself. Go ahead and check me out, and you know, you can Google me, and you can go on my website, but talk to someone who I've placed or someone who's paid me a fee for the people I've placed, and give yourself more comfort. I think in some ways, and I'm not comparing the education, but in some ways recruiters are very much like doctors, where if someone says they're a recruiter, there's an assumption that they have this certain skill, and they really don't. Just like we assume if someone's got a medical degree, then they must be some incredibly talented specialist, when in reality the medical world has good ones and bad ones too.
Absolutely true. Well, I wanted to ask that question because there are going to be those people that are going to say, I really want to work with a recruiter. Now, you have specialized areas, too, and you really work in the area of sales. That's your expertise. That's what you focus on.
Right.
Not that you couldn't place people in other positionings, but you have probably, through the years, developed rapport with other organizations or groups that have used your services, and they say this is reputable. I know of a gentleman, when he had his company, the people that were the recruiters sometimes would call his company and say, are you looking for someone? Do you have any particular needs that perhaps I could assist you with? Now, that sounds a little crazy, but that's what they would do. And he developed a very good rapport with certain people. So when something came up that really didn't work out very well and there was a somewhat negative spin on it, the recruiter said, don't you worry about it. I know all about XYZ. We'll take it from here. And what had happened is that this person had lied. So, and that's something I want to cover, too. You talk about resumes. Whatever somebody does, when they're submitting a resume, do not lie on that resume, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, literally just this morning, we had a candidate who, and this happens a lot in recessions, right? Because it's very competitive after a recession. And this is what I don't like about the resume books that are on the shelves, and what I'm hoping my book will help people with, because Harper walks Casey through how to write a contemporary resume. And one of the things every headhunter experiences is, if you were unemployed for 6 months, I don't care if you were laid off or you stayed home to take care of your sick mom or you decided to write the great American novel, whatever it is, does it potentially mean it's a negative on your resume? Potentially, but I have a much better chance of explaining that you decided to stay home with your sick mom than I do finding out that you took your resume, like some of these books tell you to do, and you buried your lost 6 months in between the last job and the job before that and hope nobody would find out, because inevitably somebody finds out, and when they do, the company fires you, and then they're mad at me, the recruiter, for not knowing. So what I tell all my candidates is, if you tell me up front some negative in your background, we all have skeletons in our closet, I can generally overcome it, because companies hire people who got fired, they hire people who quit, they hire people that make mistakes. They don't hire liars. And the revenge will be swift, and you could be doing great at your job, but you left out 6 months of your work history, and I guarantee you somebody at that company worked with you at that last job, they're going to point it out to your boss, and they're going to fire you, and they should. So yeah, I'm a big proponent of honesty on a resume. The education is always one that people do. People are very sensitive about their education. I try to give them comfort, Don. I try to tell them, look, and I say this as someone with a master's degree, 25 years of placing salespeople, I have yet to have anybody say to me, I want someone with X grade point average. Now, they sometimes want a degree, but I've never had anybody ask me for a degree from a certain college, and I've never had anybody ask me for a certain grade point average. The bottom line is some companies want a degree, some companies don't care, but these books that tell you to put, okay, you only have an associate's degree, but just put BS degree 1990, they'll never know, or put 4 years and don't put you have a degree, and they'll just assume you have a degree, and what they don't know doesn't hurt them. There's all of these tricks that people do, but it infuriates companies to find out later. So it will come back to haunt you. And in the chapter, we walk Casey through how to write a contemporary resume. And that part, by the way, is probably the biggest technological change that we talk about in the book, because you know, most people will tell you if you have a resume in the old days, right, you want to put your resume on thick bonded paper and make sure that it looks good and you want to write a long cover note, and these books tell you how to write cover notes. Oh, my God, those days are long gone. They're dinosaurs. Resumes now, first of all, most people have more than one, which is anathema to the old way of doing it, because resumes are altered and customized to the posting that you're sending the resume on. Secondarily, you have to understand that because these resumes are going into an ATS, a database that is searchable, they're now being searched by keywords. So a typical, I don't know, software company in the web analytics space is searching for, does she live in Chicago? Does she know web analytics? Was she a sales rep? They're putting those keywords in. Your cover note that you labored over for hours and hours is never even read. Not by anyone. It's a waste of your time. So what Harper does in the book is he says, no, you want to put your time into writing a good subject line. You want to make sure that the keywords that they're going to search by are highlighted in your resume, and you want to customize your resume to the posting. This is why so many of your listeners are sending out resumes and hearing nothing, and they think there's something wrong with their resume. There's nothing wrong with your resume. It's just that nobody's searching for it because of the way it's constructed.
That is such valuable information, because it is email. I mean, there's so many areas of communication today that have altered so dramatically. And having those key words, bingo, and unless someone supplies them to you, you really are going to have to figure that out. And that's a challenge. And the book covers so many different informations. One of the biggest areas when it comes to interviews, and you give so much information on how to prepare for the interview, what you need to do, so on and so forth. But compensation. Most of the time, people go in, and I think of a client of mine that had a six-figure number that she wanted, and she really was having a tough time because that was her primary focus. And this, it's okay, but how does someone handle that? Because you don't want to stick foot in mouth.
Exactly, right. And this is why in the book we make the analogy to dating. Because, look, we all want to know whether the person we're dating is potentially, you know, marriage material, and whether he or she has a good job, and whether she's an upstanding citizen. But imagine a date where you sat down at a restaurant, knew somebody for 2 seconds, and said, okay, Don, I'd like to have your W-2s for the last 5 years, and I want to know how you feel about children, and have you ever been convicted of a crime? I mean, it's just not done. Nobody would ever do that on a date. They know you have to perform and charm and warm up, and then you can find out these things. And the second or third date is it comes up in normal conversation. And yet in interviews, we somehow lose that common sense approach. And someone like your friend walks in and says, okay, I need a six-figure salary and I want benefits. And is there anyone here I can carpool with? And it sends the wrong message. It's very similar to the feeling someone gets in a date. They just feel resentful. So as hard as this is for my candidates, who are every bit as money conscious as your friend, as hard as it is for my candidates, one of the big messages I get across is the first interview is not about you. It's about the company.
Right.
I know that you need to know about the salary, and you will, and I don't expect you to take the job until you find out, and I don't expect you to take the job if the salary is not right. But if you go in and talk about any matters of convenience or compensation or special needs of your kids, you are going to blow it. So on the first interview, there is no discussion of salary. And in fact, if they ask you, which they often do, candidates will say, well, you told me not to talk about salary, but the company brought it up. Well, that's fine, because that's a good sign, because the company doesn't want to talk salary on the first interview either. But if they feel they must, then that means you must be doing really well in the interview. But even then, it's so important, and Harper, you know, has a minor heart attack in the book about this, because Casey wants to get her money. And Harper says, in the first conversation about compensation, you must stay neutral. In other words, you simply say, and we give the script in the book, you simply say, right now I'm currently making, whatever, $80,000. At this point, I'm just interested in pursuing the opportunity. I'm sure when it comes to that, you'll make a fair offer. And that's it. Because if you give a number that is too low, you just cost yourself some money. If you give a number that is too high, they will now not bring you back for a second interview. They'll go to a backup candidate. And what I tell everybody is, trust me, there are backup candidates. Most companies are interviewing 5 legitimate finalists every time before they make an offer. So if you start asking for too much too soon, I often tell people, look, you see too many movies about this, and people think there's all this negotiating going on. My experience, for the most part, companies make one offer, you take it or leave it. Rarely do they come back 2 or 3 different times. You know, this isn't Celebrity Apprentice, and we're not all Donald Trump. For the most part, companies interview 5 people, make an offer to the best one. If the best one doesn't like it, they may make some minor alterations, but for the most part, they say, you don't want it? Fine. We'll go to the next candidate. Game over. So you've got to be careful about that compensation question early on, as hard as that is. It's very counterintuitive, but it's really important.
I know we've just got a couple of minutes here, and I want to be sure we cover this. Courtesy is something that seems to be evaporating away. You have a very nice section in your book on a thank you. How to send thank yous. Very few people do it by hand or write something. And I found it interesting you said, never use a card. And when you're saying that, you mean like a little thank you card that you'd buy in a stationery for a store? What do you mean, don't use a card?
Yeah, and this one is sort of breaks my heart in a way, because I'm trying to be honest in the book. For years, I recommended a handwritten card. And I still find it touching when I get one. And some candidates will still send them. But what I'm saying is, we've done an awful lot of studies about this, and sad to say, most people are simply not getting, at least at the corporate levels where you're sending these things, they either are not getting their direct mail, they don't get it very quickly. There have been some studies to say that people who would normally check their mail every single day are now checking it once or twice a week. So if someone's unemployed, or in desperate need of a job, or seriously in need of a job, and is waiting on a company to make an offer, and needs to let that company know how they feel about the job, the sad thing to say is, we can't risk a handwritten card anymore. You've got to send a heartfelt email. Does it have the same look and feel? No. You know, but unfortunately, that day has passed. You can't risk it. If it was a high enough level job, Donna, and you knew that it was going to be a long process, I think you could still do it. It's still a lovely touch, and I have no reason to think you can't back up your email with a handwritten card. But if you interview on Monday, you send a card on Tuesday that they don't get till Friday and don't look at till the following Tuesday, guess what? They assume you're not interested, and you may not get that second interview. It's simply too risky.
It's just amazing. So email is the best. Oh, and there's so much more in Harper's Rules. For those of you listening, if you are interested in wanting to know how to more effectively find yourself a positioning, how to work effectively with a recruiter, how to find one, what are the rules, what is going on in today's world, Harper's Rules is just excellent. Danny Cahill has been my guest. Danny, quickly, your website, please.
Yes, our company's website is HobsonAssoc.com. There is a website for the book, HarpersRules.com. It's also on Amazon and in Barnes & Nobles as well.
Harpers, and that's plural, HarpersRules.com. Thank you very much, Danny, for being my guest today. You've done an excellent job with this book, and it is loaded with ammunition for creating change in life and really pretty up to date with everything that is going on in the working world and being out there and being a part of it in a new way. And I'm so grateful for your having done it. Thank you again for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. 888-815-9756 is the number when we come back. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And telephone lines are open, 888-815-9756. Wow, we've got such a terrific lineup coming up next week, and I hope that you will join us. Now, by the way, for those of you listening up in Alaska, I'm going to be up in Fairbanks and Anchorage next week. So I'll be doing my broadcast from each of those cities and wearing, I don't think I'm going to need long johns when I'm up there, but it's going to be, I think, pretty much like it is here in the Pacific Northwest on the cool side. Spring is definitely coming in. Now, on Monday, I want to let you know, for you music lovers, we're going to be talking with a world-renowned pianist. His name is Byron Janis. His book is called Chopin and Beyond. Now, what makes this man extremely interesting is not only was he a child protege with the piano, his skills are just amazing, but this man also had a series of paranormal experiences. His wife is Maria, Gary Cooper's daughter, and so we're going to be talking. I'm not sure if she's going to be on the line with him or not, but these are two fascinating people. The book Chopin and Beyond is dealing with the paranormal experience as well as Byron Janis's life, which is absolutely amazing. He was a world traveler. Tuesday, we're going to be talking about climate change and the oceans. Dr. John Slade is going to be my guest. Then we're going to be talking with Bethany Moradian, and we've got two of her books, which I think are just absolutely interesting. I Got Scammed, So You Don't Have To, and then the other one, The Mystery Shopper Training Program. You can make good money doing it. It's a fascinating subject, so we'll be talking about both of those things. Then on Thursday, we'll be traveling to England via technology, talking with a woman by the name of Angela Kilmartin, who has dedicated her life to helping women avoid urinary infections and other such infections. She has been a woman that's walked the route of having to deal with those issues herself, so she has the Patient's Encyclopedia that's going to be there. And then the Silent Voices of the Soul, Robin Lee Vella, is going to be with me a week from today. We're going to be talking about her development into the area of the intuitive realm. Now, I know I have a caller on the line, so if you're listening and you'd like to call in and chat with me, here is the phone number, 888-815-9756. Welcome, caller. What's your first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, this is Stephen. I'm calling from Canada.
Hi, Stephen. Where in Canada?
I'm calling from the East Coast.
From the East Coast of Canada. Okay. Well, I hope the sun's shining there a little bit brighter for you than it is here.
Well, it's been raining the last couple of days, but the sun did come out today, so it's nice.
Yahoo! Well, maybe you can huff and puff a little bit and send it over here to the West Coast, because it's been raining off and on here. We've got gray skies, and I think every once in a while a patch of blue goes by, and it's a teaser. It's like, we are here, you know. There is a blue sky up above all this gray. Oh, well, whatever. It's the being in the Pacific Northwest. They talk about, you know, Perry Como sang about the blue skies of Seattle. The reason this song was so loved is that whenever we get them, we want to capture them forever. But they seem to be taken over by the gray all too frequently. Down to business with you, Stephen. First thing that I am looking at with you is hard work. Lots of hard work. However, I'm seeing a smile on your face, and I feel like the shirt sleeves are rolled up, and you're just feeling good. It's like you are testing yourself. You're passing the test. You are someone that's saying, I can do this, but not only can I do it, I'm proving to me that I am what I feel I am. So I think you are coming out of a cocoon that you were in for a long period of time. And I really like this feeling that I'm getting with you, because just like a butterfly, when it comes out of the cocoon, it has to stretch, it has to move, it has to break the shell, it has to be quiet even for a while so its wings can dry so that it can finally fly. So you're in this in-between phase, and you are discovering, for the lack of a better description, your wings. And I want to say, keep on smiling, keep on working hard. The results are forthcoming, and I don't think they're going to take as long as you expect. Now, you're going to be in and out of school for the next 3 to 4 years, and this is important because you are going to have to refine skills. Well, that's a given anymore in today's world. I don't know any profession where you're not going to refine skills. And I want you to build your support network much more efficiently than what you have known. If you do that, then you're going to have that sense of solidarity behind you because of building that foundation. So I really like what I see for you, Stephen. Hard work, you know, those aren't dirty words. It's just hard work. That's what you have to do for right now. What's on your mind?
I have a question, but I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on what you mean by building a support network. Do you professionally or personally?
I'd say on both levels. You want people in your personal life that are going to really encourage you to be the best you can be. You want the same in your professional life. You want to be around people that, one, you can communicate with, and two, they're not going to put you down or call you stupid or think it's a waste of time. It's something that you need the right kind of people that have enough respect for themselves that they honor and respect others. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, I think I definitely have a need for more support. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and remember... Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Go ahead and ask your question.
The question, and actually the show was really interesting, and really, in fact, I'm thinking of purchasing the book that your guest was talking about as I'm finishing up a master's degree. In fact, one of the things I did was I quit a really good job to go back to school and questioned whether or not, you know, that would be costly to me to have on my resume in the future that, you know, I left a good job. Mind you, leaving a job for school is, you know, I think most people understand that. But still, it was a big worry for me when I made that choice. But anyway, I'll get to my question. I'm actually pleased to hear what you said, but my question is I'm having a lot of difficulties getting out of the cocoon, as you said, to finish up this research project that I'm doing, and I want to ask you if you see me, you know, completing it and publishing my work, and then I'm kind of uncertain as to what's next for me. Sort of having this feeling like, yes, like you said, being free, but also kind of like, what's next?
Mm-hmm. All right.
If that makes any sense.
Yes, it does, but I'm going to need to ask you some questions. What's
sure.
your time frame on finishing your paper? You will finish it, by the way, but what is the time frame that you would like to have it completed by?
Last month.
No. Let's be realistic. Is it by the end of the year? Is it by fall? What is it you're looking at?
No, less sooner. I'm hoping to tie things up this month.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. That's the big deal. That's got to be done, let's say, by the last day of this month. Okay? So you've got so many things going on in your mind that you need to make that absolutely your first priority, period. Even though you're wanting to look perhaps for a job right now, you know that you need to get this document done. What is it then? Let's take the next question. What is it, what kind of a positioning or environment would you like to be in?
Well, I have applied to continue my studies and to do a PhD. I just have not received an offer that I'm satisfied with yet. But I also have ambitions to either get into a sort of a startup company, start up my own, or partner with somebody. But my ambitions to continue my education are still pretty strong, too.
All right. So what is your major? What is it that is your focus with your education?
I'm a computer scientist.
All right. Are you interested in getting into working with robotics? Do you want to be in the medical field? What is the environment you would like to see yourself within?
Probably doing research similar to what I'm doing now, which is, I'll just say, research into cutting-edge technology, basically.
All right. So you are wanting to be an individual deeply involved in the industry of of computing, that type of thing, and researching. But again, what I'd like for you to think about is, do you want this to be in the area of entertainment? Do you want it to be in medicine? Do you want it to be in outer space, technology? The reason I'm saying you need to look at those particular venues or any others that come into your mind, this is where you need to look for the type of work you'd like to be in. A business of your own is not going to be such a good idea because a business of your own is 24/7. And that is not going to enable you to continue with your education. So you need to determine where you would like to put yourself, and then I would say put a resume together saying you're ongoing with your education and you are looking to be a part of an industry that is interested in having researchers like yourself as part of the team. You're going to come in on a level, probably the low man on the totem pole, which is fine. That will enable you to understand how to work within the industry itself. Also, you need to be able to look at working with a recruiting group of people. And you can go to more than one recruiter if you want. But you need to try to find headhunters, which is the more popular term, so that they can do a lot of the looking for you because you are in school.
Great.
Does that help you?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And like you said, my first focus is finishing my immediate project.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stephen, I've got to go on break.
Okay.
I'm sorry to have to do that to you. I wish you the best, and do give me a call back and let me know how you do.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Stephen. Have a wonderful weekend. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, that phone line is open for you if you like to, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. A quick reminder, if you want to find out about the guests that are coming up on the air with me on the Donna Sebo Show, all you need to do when you're checking out my programming is touch on show information, that button, and you'll get a listing of every guest that is going to be coming up for the month. And that is done every single month. Also, you can check on my newsletter, which you can get through DelphiInternational.com, my website. Find out who is coming up. Also, I've put in my newsletter my three top picks of the people that I interview. Of course, every guest I have is very, very special, and I really value what they've contributed. But there are three special persons that I feel that their books are especially significant, and you will find that in my newsletter as well. So check it out. You just tap the button that says newsletters. The one for this month is going to be up there with schedule, itinerary, and all kinds of other good things that I think you might enjoy. Yesterday I said I would share with you a wonderful salad recipe that is so light and it's so easy and it's got this wonderful, wonderful unique flavoring to you, to it that I thought you really would enjoy. Now, this is how it's made with fresh asparagus and a pecorino cheese. That's right, a pecorino cheese. And then you have like a lemon dressing. This is so simple, it's so easy, and it's not going to add inches to the hips, even though it'll pass through your lips very, very quickly. You're going to need 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1/4 cup of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of lemon marmalade or grated lemon zest. That's 1/2 teaspoon of lemon marmalade or grated lemon zest. 1 pound of asparagus, and you want to, of course, snap off the tough ends of the asparagus. You're going to need a 2-3 ounce chunk of pecorino romano cheese, or whatever your favorite romano cheese might be, and a little bit, of course, your salt and coarsely ground pepper. Now, this is what you do. You take your olive oil, your lemon juice, and marmalade or zest, and just whisk it together. That'll take you all of 30 seconds. And then using a mandolin, a vegetable slicer, or peeler, you want to thinly shave your asparagus. And they'll come out long and diagonal in the shavings. You put those in a medium-sized bowl, and then you shave or thinly slice your Romano cheese, add that to the bowl, drizzle with 1/2 of that lemon vinaigrette, season with a little bit of salt and pepper, gently toss it, and then serve the remaining vinaigrette on the side. It is wonderfully flavorful. You could even make this in advance if you want it and let it marinate in this delicious vinaigrette. Light, tasty, goes delicious with meat, fish, fowl. It doesn't make any difference. You will really, really like it. It's so light and easy, and the taste is wonderful. Asparagus is just such a delicious vegetable. And you can get year round it in so many places. It's just amazing what we're able to accomplish today. I wanted to share a story with you. Mother's Day is coming up, and I know that so many of you are planning. My goodness, the shopping centers are packed with people, and guys are out buying flowers by the bushel baskets. It's just an amazing period. Mother's Day is one of the biggest days of the year for the restaurants because of everyone taking mom, grandma, aunties, whoever out for that special day. And I thought that it would be fun to share a couple of stories about some people, some ladies especially, who are doing some very special things. One lady's name is Vivian McCabe, and she lives in Ohio. She said she's always looked for ways to help others. She's organized food and clothing to donate. She's worked with her church. Whatever she could do, she always was happy to participate in. Well, about 8 years ago, she said her health took a very bad turn, and she had to move permanently from her own home to a nursing and rehabilitation center. So she wasn't able to do what she used to do in volunteer work. But one day, there was a member of the staff that was having a conversation with her and mentioned about an organization called Locks of Love. And what it does, it provides children suffering medical hair loss with free or discounted wigs made from donated hair. So Vivian went to her hairstylist and said, "You know what? This is something maybe I could do." And her hairstylist said, "Okay, let's see how we can work with your hair and let's let it grow out." So it had grown a full 17 inches. That took a bit of time. And her hairdresser said, "Oh, we can do a real neat short haircut for you. 17 inches, your hair is so nice, they will be thrilled to get this donation." So she ends up with a brand new hairdo, donating this tremendous amount of hair, 17 inches in length, to this organization called Locks of Love. Now, she said there's a lot of different organizations that offer something similar. And she said it's going to be a few more years before she's able to donate again. But she said it's just amazing what we can do, sometimes in ways that we would never have thought even were possible to make a difference. And that's with her. Then there is a mom. She had to find herself a job because it was necessary. And she ends up going to work. However, she has a family, and she said it was just very difficult for her because she'd always liked being there when her kids came home from school, reading them stories, and she said it just wasn't going to be the same way anymore. So they found another way to do something together as a family where she felt like she wasn't so alienated from everyone, and it was making cookies. Her son came home from school, and she said, "Okay, what do we want to do?" Her son said, "We want to make baseball cookies. That's what we want to do." She said it took a lot of time. The family participated in it. And she said, "Oh, boy, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this all done." However, everybody in the family said, "Let's get this done." And that's what they ended up doing. So she said, "We've arranged schedules so all of us could participate in each phase of what needed to be done." And you know what? The family ended up making all of the baseball cookies that her son wanted and then some. And he said, "You know what, Mom? This is really cool what we're able to do." So a mom went back to work. The family had to reorganize and restructure getting things done the way they wanted them done. And the son got the baseball cookies because everybody participated. Great story about a mom that made an adaptation. Well, a mom that also made a contribution, thinking she didn't have anything she could do anymore. We all have something to do. For those of you celebrating Mother's Day, I wish you the best. Have an absolutely awesome weekend. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day, a magnificent weekend. The next broadcast will be coming from Fairbanks, Alaska, live. And you'll be there. Donna Sebo here. Have a fabulous day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.